Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. And this is the sound of Jupiter's auroras, recorded by NASA's Juno spacecraft. The spacecraft's mission is one of the highlights of the past year in astronomy and astrophysics.
Contributor Jean Creighton joins us now, as she does every month, and shares her perspective on some of those highlights. Hello, Jean. It is great to see you.
Hi, Bonnie. It's great to be here.
And this is our yearly wrap-up of all great things that happened in astronomy. Well, we can't talk about every single thing because we don't have enough time, but there were some big ones this year.
There were some big ones this
year. Amazing things. Like, let's start with gravitational waves.
Yes, let's. It was thrilling to be sitting at UWM and watching the press conference where the NSF person, the National Science Foundation person, stood up and said, "We discovered gravitational waves." It's like, wow.
You were there at that moment.
It was fantastic. So the significance of this, I mean, there are multiple aspects of this, but let's just talk about the science for starters. We found two black holes about 30 times heavier than the sun, who were about the distance of the width of Wisconsin, traveling approximately 60% of the speed of light toward each other, merge, making such a powerful event that for a fraction of a second, they produced more energy than all the stars in all the galaxies in the whole universe together.
Holy moly.
Yeah. That is such a powerful event that it sent ripples through space-time, which we call gravitational waves. Einstein, in fact, predicted these, a billion years later.
Unbelievable.
It is still unbelievable.
The scale is just astounding
to me. It is. So we need to remember what a magnificent astronomical, I mean, when we say here astronomical, it's just true. It's epic what event happened. Now, on the other hand, the other epicness is the vision that scientists at NSF had to pursue a very difficult technical achievement of measuring these gravitational waves, which, although they're monumental in size, the effect they have on matter is very small. So there had to be a lot of ingenuity, a lot of vision to support basic research.
Well, not only that, but just the fortitude to sit down and do years and years of combing through that data.
Well, the data itself wasn't years old. The events happened in fall of 2015, and people just had to crunch the data.
Okay, so I knew that there was a lot of work involved.
That's right.
Yeah.
But it's through years in preparation
for that.
Okay.
Okay.
Because this machine produces terabytes of data, I think, in a day. So you needed to be very clever about how are you going to analyze the data fast enough, not only so that you can get your results in a remotely appropriate amount of time, but also so that if you saw something totally cool happening in this constellation over here, you can notify as quickly as possible many other observatories around the world and say, how about you look over here and we can see what exactly is causing this. So for both the science and the science wherewithal that got us there, this is, I think everybody would argue, the most important astronomical event, maybe even in science, this year.
Okay. But we had some smaller, equally cool ones, just maybe not as epic in scope.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of Juno and Jupiter.
Yes. So Juno is a spacecraft that is orbiting around Jupiter. This is the eighth spacecraft that's visited Jupiter. And it has its main purpose is to understand the interior of Jupiter. And you might think, well, surely we know this, but it's actually a tricky measurement, a tricky analysis to make. So we're hoping to understand that, and we're hoping to understand a lot more about the aurora on Jupiter. I think a lot of people are surprised when they hear that other planets have aurora too. It's not just not just the Earth. And because the magnetic field of Jupiter is so incredibly strong, the aurora there are phenomenal. I mean, if you were to Google Hubble Space Telescope Jupiter aurora, you will find footage where we can photograph the aurora changing in real time with Hubble Space Telescope.
That's always so cool.
Yeah. In fact, one of the instruments on Juno was measuring radiation counts, and they transposed it into the audible portion of the spectrum so you can hear it. And it has this eerie sound. It's quite marvelous.
So we'll be getting more of that as time goes on, but this was a great year.
Yes.
So, for Juno.
I mean, I think the rule of thumb is if a spacecraft arrives someplace in July of 16, it probably takes at least 6 months for somebody to be able to say something really profound that's been edited and refereed and all these things reviewed. So I imagine that early next year, we'll be able to hear more about this.
Well, one of the other things that happens as we look back on the year is that not only do some things begin or get discovered or announced, but some things end, mm-hmm. too. And I'm thinking of Rosetta.
Indeed, Rosetta and also the Cassini spacecraft, they both have almost over 12 years now, and their mission is ending. Now, Rosetta was studying comets. And what's interesting about this, there's always surprises, aren't they? Remember, Rosetta was the spacecraft that sent Philae, that little lander, on the comet. We've expected that some of the water that's on Earth came from comets, because we know that comets are mostly made of water. But to our surprise, if you look at the isotopic abundance, if you look at the kind of flavors, if you will, of water on the comet compared to that on Earth, they don't match. So that would suggest that this comet, this kind of comet, isn't going to be the vehicle that brings water to Earth. So that's interesting. We don't know if this is, you know, a trend, if this is true of all comets. Of course, you can't say that from one data point, but it doesn't confirm our ideas about how water might have come to Earth.
And that's important, too, in the scientific process.
Oh, absolutely.
You need to know what isn't true as
absolutely.
Well as what is.
Absolutely. And as I said, one data point isn't necessarily closing, shutting us down, but it does make you pause. The Cassini spacecraft has been now for 14 years studying so carefully Saturn and its moons. And that's also being prepared to kind of shut down and have it, first plunge into Saturn and see as much as we can. And of course, we know that invariably that will end the mission. But hopefully we'll get some good data on the way down.
Yeah, exactly. It's always sad to see them end, but we also know that things are, you know, coming down the pike to either replace them or to look at other things. And so I know one of the things that happened this year was Pluto. Mm-hmm. We got some incredible pictures from Pluto.
We did, and that's thanks to the New Horizons mission, which flew by Pluto last July, so July of 15. They're interesting. So fewer impact craters. Do you remember the heart that we see on the pictures? The one side of the heart is quite different than the other. There are mechanisms for Pluto to erase some of its craters, and we're not quite sure why that is. I don't know if you remember, but if you look at some of the images, especially in the heart region, there are places that look like convection cells to me, which might not help our audience members. But imagine a hexagonal shape glued together like tiles. It looks like the surface of Pluto has these, almost like we're looking at the top of bubbles, which would suggest that there's some heat from within that churns the nitrogen ice. And we're not quite sure where this heat's coming from. It could be radioactive decay, but that's something still to be determined. We're looking at a possible liquid water ocean perhaps under that ice, maybe some kind of ice volcano. So, you know, stay tuned. Pluto is obviously a place that, like every place, the more we know about them, the more intriguing they are.
And that leads me to kind of wrapping up today, thinking ahead, thinking of what's coming down the pike. We're going to a whole different star.
Well, that's the hope, right? That's the plan. First of all, we've discovered Proxima Centauri, so that's the closest star system to the sun, to us, has a planet. And it's about 1.2 light years away. So in other words, light takes a little over a year to travel the distance between us. And it's very close. This planet is very close to its, let's say, parent star. So only 5% of the distance between the Earth and the sun.
That is very close.
So probably not the kind of place that we would be able to pack our bags and live. And yet, there have been plans announced in 2016 about getting, you know, a brain tank to see if we can find the technological wherewithal to send a very small ambassador, the size of a stamp. It would have to travel about 20% the speed of light. It would take on the order of 20 years to get to Alpha Centauri. And of course, you know, we wouldn't have people on this stamp. Obviously, this is just a machine. This is a pretty bold proposal, but I must confess, I don't want to burst any bubbles at this point. I love to think that we would start dreaming and putting together all the things that we would need to make that dream possible.
I just love the idea of this little stamp-sized machine traveling across the universe.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's a marvelous thought to hold on to as we prepare to welcome the new year.
Well, Jean Creighton, I, as always, love to have you here. I am looking forward to our discussions in the new year. I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about. We have never run out yet. but in the meantime, I wish you the best holidays and New Year celebrations, and we'll talk to you in January.
Thank you so much.
Jean Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee and a regular Lake Effect contributor. You can revisit her interviews from the past year at WUWM.com.